the Tokyo Olympics are proving a little pedestrian for you, a bit predictable. Unlikely given yesterday, but nevertheless, you could lobby for some of the following to be included in the future. Two people put a sinew looped behind their ears and pull to see who wins. Or there is the knuckle hop, in which athletes hop on their knuckles and toes as far as they can. These are just a couple of the events in the world. Eskimo Indian Olympics, held a week or so ago in Fairbanks, Alaska. The competitions are meant to symbolize traditional Alaskan native survival and hunting skills. And it's their 60th year. Gina Kellogg is the chair of the World Eskimo Indian Olympics, the WEIO. And she is on the line from Fairbanks, Alaska. Hello, Gina.
Hello.
Can I ask you first, because people are going to start shouting at me, that we're not allowed to say Eskimo anymore. We have to say Inuit. But you call your games the World Eskimo Indian Olympics. Please explain.
Well, the rejection of the word is something that started mostly in Canada, where Eskimo people are Inuits. They're all Inuit there. In Alaska, we have other people of the same ethnic group that are not Inuit. We have Yupiks and Chupiks and Siberian Yupiks, and it's very common for people in Alaska of that heritage to refer to themselves as Eskimo and to accept the term and be proud of it.
Excellent. Thank you for that. That's a very good thing to know. How'd the games go this year?
We were really relieved to see that the number of people who came back and the number of visitors we had after being gone for 2 years and after people having to deal with COVID and just coming out of the COVID pandemic, you know, with tentative steps, but we had a good turnout. It was smaller than usual, but that was expected, and a very enthusiastic turnout.
Now, these events, and I did not intend any mockery, although they are slightly strange to us, but they are no stranger when you think about it than some of those happening in Tokyo. I mean, lifting very heavy things, synchronized diving. What decides, I mean, they're more useful, obviously, but what decides who wins the ear pull, for example?
You either pull the sinew off of your opponent's ear or they give up because of the pain.
And
so it's like a tug of war with your ears.
Yeah, but the tug of war doesn't necessarily cause pain. That's a trial of strength. This is a trial of pain toleration.
Right. And it comes from having to deal with being hurt when you're out somewhere where you have to keep going, where you can't be helped with, you know, with someone helping you with a wound. And we always liken it to if you are out on the ice or out in the woods and you get frostbite, you can't just sit down and be in pain. You have to keep going. So you have to build up a tolerance to pain. And it, you know, even today, it can be a matter of survival, whether or not you can keep yourself going when you've been hurt.
How did you get involved?
Where you can be safe.
How did you get involved in these games? How did you get involved? You were a competitor.
Yeah. When I was in my 20s, we have arts and crafts vendors, people, Native artisans from all over the state and even from the lower 48 in Canada. And we have dance groups, and we have athletes, and we have the Miss WEIO pageant. I started off as a vendor. I did beadwork and sold my jewelry that I made at the event. In my 20s, I was also a construction carpenter. And I was watching the Eskimo stick pull and feeling very buff at the time. I said, well, I could do that. And back then, it was a little more relaxed as far as who could get in. And so I just went down to the floor rather than having to register and all that. I just went down to the floor and got in line to do it, and I won the first time I tried it. So that got me hooked, and I learned more games, and I was a competitor through my 20s and into my maybe early 30s. And then I became, from that, I became a coach, a floor official, a board member in the organization, and now the chair of the board. And then as my children were coming up, they got involved. And now my grandson, for the first time, did the ear pull this year.
Did he win?
No, but he came in fourth, which is pretty good for a first time. You'll have to excuse my voice. You came off a week of very little sleep and long days.
Ah, and probably yelling in support of various people.
Cheering, yeah.
Yeah.
Singing. Yeah.
Just tell me a little more about the stick pull.
Well, we have two different kinds. They have what we call the Indian stick pull, which is a tapered stick. It's about an inch around in the middle and then tapers down to about half an inch. And it's a two-ended, it's a double-ended stick. And we cover that with grease. Back in the day, they used bear grease. Now we use Crisco. And it's to simulate having to deal with fish and getting fish out of the net or out of the fish wheel or out of the fish trap. And so two people, their hands meet in the middle of that stick, and on a signal, they do whatever they can without moving their feet or re-gripping the stick to get it away from the other competitor. So, and that game came directly from having to deal with fish. And the Eskimo stick pull is a dowel about 18 inches long, about an inch and a half around, and two competitors grasp it, one in the middle, hands together, one on the outside of their hands. And it's a 2 out of 3 where you change hand position. And that comes directly from the way in which the people of the Arctic hunt for seals. They send the lure down, and when a seal takes the lure, there's a stick that is pulled, and it stops because it's longer than the hole in the ice that they're hunting through. And then they have to pull the seal up using that stick. So it's also like a tug of war with the stick, and it comes directly, those two games come directly from subsistence activities.
And all the games that are in competition at your event, they all mm-hmm. predate the event. I mean, they are all...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
right.
There's no new games that have been added in the last, it'd be hundreds of years. They're all traditional games that were passed down generation to generation.
And things presumably that keep people fit in order to go out and do those very activities.
Mm-hmm. Several of the games rely on your complete total body strength. Like balancing on one hand while you reach up to touch a ball, that takes every muscle in your body.
Oh, I've seen video of that. We couldn't find one that was able to be put on our website, but... This is the high kick, right?
Well, that's the one-hand reach. The high kicks are jumping off the floor, jumping for height, and then landing in a certain way. Like you see the gymnasts at the Olympics, they have to land with their feet together and not move.
Mm-hmm.
We have the two-foot high kick is similar to that, where you jump off both feet, kick the ball with both feet together, and land with your feet parallel. And you can hop, but your feet can't come away from the parallel position. And the record for that, for the men, is over 8.5 feet.
What?
And then there's the one-foot high kick.
Yeah.
And we have the Canadian style this year. We alternate between the Canadian style and the traditional Alaskan style. In the Canadian style, the record is 9 feet, 9 inches, and that's the men's record, where they jump off both feet at the same time, kick the ball with just one foot, and then land only on the foot they used for the kick. And the record for that is 9 feet, 9 inches.
Good Lord. And what use is that particular skill out in the wild?
The story that's passed down to us is if you've ever been to the Arctic, there's no trees, there's no big hills, there's no any large, any topical, there's no... Nothing larger than like a hill, maybe 4 feet high.
Oh, nothing to give you any vantage point.
Right. So you can see for long distances on the flat. So if a hunting party or people are traveling and they need to get a message to the community that they're getting close to, they would send a runner to get closer to the village, and they would start stopping and kicking. And the different styles of kick meant different things in a message. For instance, if a hunting party was out and they send a runner to tell the village, we need people to come help get the whale, onto the ice, or something like that, there would be a kick designated to send that message.
So it's like a semaphore.
Okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's a sign given by the body to
right.
indicate a particular thing.
Yes, exactly.
All right. The other one that I was wondering about was the four-man carry.
So my son's specialty.
Is that what he does? One person carries four others, is it? Or is it a multiple of one?
So we try to get volunteers to be the people being carried, and it's young men all in the about 150 pounds. So you're carrying about 600 pounds, and that's because if you kill large game and you have to get it back to your camp or back to your community, back in the day before we had four-wheelers and snow machines and trucks and things, you had to carry it. So it was to see how much game you could carry for distance.
And it's always four people in various weights, you mean?
Right. Well, we try to get them as close to 150 pounds as possible.
Uh-huh.
Because you want the weight balanced on your body if you're carrying them. So you have someone in front of you who's holding on to somebody behind you on your back, and then you have somebody on each arm who are holding on to each other across your chest and your back.
Right.
It's like wearing a necklace of people.
Yeah. This, as you mentioned, you now have snowmobiles and trucks and who knows what. So these are in some way archaic activities. Why are people still signed up to them?
Because it's a really strong connection to our culture. A lot of times young people who aren't skilled in the sports of the dominant culture find that they really can excel in the native games that come from their own indigenous culture. So it's a spiritual thing, it's a fun activity, it's a healthy alternative to unhealthy activities, and it's a pride you can take in something from your culture that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. You are, excuse me for pronunciation problems, Koyukan Athabascan?
Koyukan. Dena is our word for who we are.
Yeah.
But yes, commonly known as Athabascan.
And is there a particular event that your people would identify more than others, given that you are bringing a whole lot of different tribes and people here together for the games?
Well, the Indian stick pull is played in the villages on gatherings like the 4th of July. They have games for the kids, and so that game is always a popular one in the villages in the interior of Alaska where my people are from. Or the toe kick is a game that we share with the Eskimo people, the Arctic people, and that's for learning how to move quickly across ice if it's starting to melt underneath you. We call it rotting. The ice rots in the springtime when it's breakup. And so if you're out on the ice for any reason and it starts to give way underneath you, you need to be able to jump really kind of with a great deal of agility, and that's the toe kick, which is shared by most of the people in Alaska. Or the kneel jump, where you start on your knees with your feet flat behind you, and you jump from that position for distance. And if you were in a village even to this day and there were older people, they prefer to sit on the floor. And they sit in that position because they were trained as children to sit like that and have to get up quickly in case anything happened where you had to move quickly. And that's where that came from, was to learn how to move quickly and to get up from a resting position.
This would be good for all of us, wouldn't it? It sounds like a really, really busy kind of yoga.
Oh, yeah.
Hey?
It's kind of a combination of sort of a yoga and gymnastics or a martial art. A lot of the moves are similar to martial arts.
Yeah, I was thinking that. You were mentioning the kind of communication with the body that's necessary because of the very flat land and no vantage point. There's also a thing I've seen called the blanket toss. What's that?
Oh, yes. It's a blanket, quote-unquote, blanket made from retired boats, hunting boats, the kayaks. When they retire their boat, they take it apart and use the skin to make this blanket. It could be walrus skin or seal skin. And then the story is that they used it to get people high enough to see a long distance, but pretty much it's just for fun. And so you put a person on the blanket, and about, depending on the size of the blanket, up to about 50 people are around the blanket, and they pull in opposite directions simultaneously to get the blanket up, moving up and down with the person on it. And people kind of try to liken it to a trampoline.
Yeah.
But on a trampoline, you're in control and you're jumping. On the blanket toss, you are literally being tossed. You're being thrown.
Right.
And then you get points for style, for attire, for sticking the landing. And when they have, it's called Nalukatuk in the villages in the Arctic, which is a festival during the whaling season. And someone will get on the blanket with candy. And they'll throw candy like you would throw from a parade float, but they throw it from the blanket for all the kids. And it's just a part of a celebration of the whole community because they've had a successful hunt. They've had a successful whaling season.
Now, these are not the only indigenous games that go on in your part of the world. How big a thing is this around the place?
Beg your pardon?
How big a deal are indigenous games generally? Because yours is not the only one.
Right. Well, there's Northern Games in Canada, and we have athletes that go back and forth for that. In the schools and mostly the rural communities, they actually have a program in their physical education classes where the native games are taught and competed in a statewide, in regional and statewide competition. And then we also have the Arctic Winter Games, which we share with Canada every 2 years. It's a competition between the northern provinces of Canada and the countries of the Arctic region. So we've got Alaska, you've got Greenland, you've got Russia, and you've got Norway that all compete in the Arctic Winter Games. And our games, along with many other games, but our games, the indigenous games, are included in that competition. But they also have, like, figure skating and basketball and things like that. So it's a mini Olympics as well.
Oddly, I see that, I mean, this is not necessarily odd, but we haven't mentioned any kind of swimming endurance. But there is an Alaskan called Lydia Jacoby who's won gold in Tokyo in the 100-meter breaststroke.
Yes, she did, and we're very proud of her.
Yeah. That sounds like, is that a sport that is big in Alaska, swimming?
Well, I'll tell you what, when I heard that a girl from Seward won a gold medal in swimming, my first thought was, I didn't know they had a swimming pool in Seward.
And she sure wasn't going to do it in the ocean.
No. It's swimming in the ocean here would, the water never gets that warm and we don't have sunny beaches like you do there.
Well, congratulations on your gold and thank you for exerting your understandably overexerted voice. For this interview, and it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you.
Same here. Thanks for being, for wanting to learn more about our indigenous people in Alaska.
Absolute pleasure. Gina Kallek, who is the chair of the World Eskimo Indian Olympics, the WEIO.